Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your callers from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. And we're going to be talking about, well, I would say the exciting things, but I would probably said the tragic things that are happening to our country economically, as we begin to see what would appear to be the demise of the dollar, the price of gold rising, the price of silver rising, the prices of platinum rising. We see people throughout the world beginning to turn against the dollar. And once we lose the reserve status of our currency, why, the savings of the entire population are going to be in jeopardy. The pension funds, the bonds, the annuities, the CDs, everything that is denominated in dollars could well face a real crisis situation, as has happened in all other nations that have ever had a fiat currency. There's absolutely nothing wrong with a fiat currency as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings, said Aristotle 2,300 years ago. And how many people in the listening audience really believe we have godlike wisdom in the White House today? And with that as a background, hi, Bob, how are you doing tonight?
Just doing terrific.
Well, tell us about the exciting things. Now, for those of you who don't read Bob Chapman's International Forecaster, you should. I get it every Sunday, and pull it down off the Internet, read it through. Fascinating information. I always feel deprived if I don't have it. So tell us what's going on.
Well, something new today. The U.S. forces have been making incursions into Syria, and they've been liquidating people that they think are cooperating with Iraq, and I think that is a very bad thing to do, because we may have another war on our hands.
Well, I think it's only a matter of time before they attack both Syria and Iran. That's the ultimate plan, is to change all the governments over there.
Yeah, you're right. That's what they intend to do. And in Iraq, we are told now that they want to use more air power, which means more civilian casualties, in order to move troops from there to someplace else, whether it's the United States or into Syria or Iran, remains to be seen. But we learned in Vietnam it doesn't work. Air firepower is wonderful, but it has its limitations. Just recently, a couple of weeks ago, in the financial sphere, the Federal Reserve announced that they were going to do away with M3.
And I don't think the average individual understands why that is such an important statement.
Well, there's factors here that enter into this, which include other things today. The M3 is important, but other things have to go along with it. But that said, it's still important in and of itself.
Well, I think for our listeners, they have to understand M3 is certainly a measure of all of the currency and loans and everything, all the money that's out there in circulation. And the fact that they're going to take that away means that they don't want us to know what they're doing. That means they could massively expand the monetary supply, destroy the value of our currency, and we wouldn't even know it was happening until it was far, far too late. Well, Bob, go ahead and pick up the story.
Well, the difference between M2 and 3 is M2 is the commercial side. M3 is all of it. And when you deduct M2 from M3, it shows you the monetary creation that's going on, not only here but outside the country, and its connection to our treasury market and other aspects of our financial markets. And it shows this tremendous amount of purchasing by foreign nations of our treasury debt. And what's important here is that, and there was just an announcement today by our Treasury Department saying that China doesn't manipulate its currency. And Mr. Snow, as the Secretary of the Treasury, must think we're stupid, because they've been telling us that China has been manipulating their currency for the last 2 or 3 years. Well, they are. But there are a number of other countries doing that. And the reason we can fund the $3 billion we need to stay solvent every day from foreigners is because they are printing their own currency, buying dollars with it, and buying treasuries to keep their currencies from appreciating. It's not only the Chinese that are doing it. Everybody else that can get away with it and make it work is doing it as well.
But that's because they want to protect their own economies. They're interested in preserving their industrial base. Our leaders are interested in destroying our industrial base.
That's true. And that's why nothing has been done about it. And, you know, you stop and you say to yourself, well, how can we make this right? It's been caused by free trade and globalization. And the only way that that can be stopped is by putting on protective tariffs. Now, America became an industrial giant, and one of the reasons why is that they had a fair and very workable system of tariffs that, you know, maybe some people didn't like them from time to time, but they were prudent under the circumstances, and they went anywhere from 1 to 2% to 1,000%. And this has been since the inception of the country. And so tariffs are good because they protect American industry. Well, of course, as you just said, and any thinking person can now identify the fact that without these tariffs and with free trade and globalization, our country is being destroyed as we've known it. And this is only the beginning. It's going to get a lot worse.
Okay, we're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob was simply making the point America thrived when we had protective tariffs. You have protective tariffs to protect your workers, to protect your industries, to protect your national sovereignty. The leaders of the United States, both Democrats and Republicans, are dedicated to the idea of a new world order, a new world religion, and their whole idea is laid out in the Earth Charter, which you can find up on the Internet, and we'll be glad to send you a copy of, is equitable distribution of finances within nations, which is communism, of course, and equitable distribution between nations, which, of course, is what's happening today as we're transferring our jobs, our factories, and our wealth overseas. And, of course, this whole thing was written up by Mikhail Gorbachev, who is lauded by presidents of the United States. I mean, certainly George Herbert Walker Bush attends Gorbachev's meetings and pays homage to him, as do so many of the rulers of our country. James Baker III is co-chairman of the Gorbachev State of the World Forum, and if you have any question, you could just give us a call, and we'll be glad to send you a copy of their 1995 meeting, and of course, who was there? The leaders of the world paying homage to Gorbachev, and of course, the Earth Charter is written by Gorbachev and Marie Strong, and of course, Stephen Rockefeller. So these people really are intent upon destroying our economy. When you understand that, everything makes sense. If you're looking for logic, it's not there. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, I think you're right, and this is part of this evolutionary process that they actually began in 1962 with GATT, and the whole thing didn't really pick up steam until in the early 1980s, and the transnational corporations, particularly the producers of manufacturers, I should say, got involved first. In fact, what's going on at Ford and GM is is something which I recognized in the early 80s. I knew exactly what they were up to because I had uncovered their plan in 1967-68.
How did you uncover it?
Just by a process of elimination, by trying to figure out how they were going to destroy, or why they, how they were going to make Americans accept world government. And the only way I could figure that they would do that is by destroying the American economy. And then we saw this tremendous influx during the 60s of illegal aliens from other countries, and then an amnesty in 1986. But they used the industrial turndown, which occurred in the early 1980s, as an excuse to go over and start setting up production facilities in other countries, in the Maquiladora system, which is started up just over the American border in Mexico, which employs thousands of people even today. And then Ford and GM both going and buying into or creating facilities in China, in Mexico, and other places. And so you knew the ball was rolling in that direction. And now they're going full bore. And what's very disappointing is that Congress just passes anything that they put before them that happens to be pro free trade and globalization. So we've got a stupendous problem. We not only have a president and administration that want that, but we have a Congress who is unwilling to accede to the desires of their constituents.
But, of course, the Democrats want exactly the same thing. I mean, the leaders of both political parties are dedicated to globalization. And, you know, there is no difference at all between Kerry and Bush, other than Kerry maybe was a little bit taller.
That's correct. And that's going to be that way in those two parties ad infinitum. But the thing that they've done here is, with the exception of a handful of people in Congress, they bought everybody, one way or the other. And they get any legislation passed they want. And so you say, what is the solution to that? Well, it's very simple. You vote almost all of them out of office.
Amen to that.
And go for third-party candidates. It's the only thing that's going to disrupt them, and if we don't do it, it's gone. And getting back to free trade and globalization and immigration, we're looking at a situation where some of the recent polls, last week there was a poll on CNN on Lou Dobbs' show, and people were asked, what do you think about illegal immigration? And 87% said it was bad, and 2 or 3% said it was good.
The president's solution is to make them all legal. I mean, that's how we're going to solve the problem. We're going to make them all all they have to do is just apply for a work permit, and then there's no longer a problem.
Well, what's shocking is this. Tonight they had another poll. I watch Lou Dobbs every night because I think the broadcast is so good. And they said, do you think that our president is handling immigration, in the illegal immigration problem properly, and is he making a mess of it or isn't he? It's a yes and no question. 2% voted for the president, 98% were against, and they brought up other polls, and one of them, which is overall scientific polls, two of them, both were over 70%. Of the public were very concerned, and it's the number one concern of American citizens today. The highest number was, and it's in this last issue of the International Forecaster, and all this sort of stuff is in there.
You know, I think it's very interesting, Bob, that India, I was just reading that India has a 2,500-mile border with Bangladesh, and they're starting to build an 8-foot-high wall, of course, with a carpentine of wire on the top of it, so people can't get across. So India can build a wall, a 2,500-mile long wall between their country and Bangladesh, but, oh, shucks, we have no, we couldn't do that here. Why, look how long it would be, and, you know, look how long our border. It's sure not 2,500 miles. with Mexico, but India can do it and we can't. There's something wrong with the picture, or maybe our leaders have no intention of enforcing our laws.
They have no intention. They think they're on a divine mission, particularly our president, because he is in direct communication with God, and he really believes that this is, you know, flooding our country this way with 20 million people who shouldn't be here, just like his wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which are just a perpetuation of what one would call Trotskyite permanent war. And that's why he's going to go into Syria and Iran, irrespective of the cost, and no matter how many people die. And these people are absolute lunatics.
Well, I think that it's far more diabolical than that. I think George is simply a figurehead for the real power, the people who really run the country behind the scenes. He doesn't even sometimes read his lines very well. That's unfortunate, but that is the reality of where we are today. Well, anyway, Bob, let's get on to the economy. And really, your take of this, certainly we're hearing this last week or so, GM is going to lay off 30,000 people, but isn't there a multiplier? You lay off 30,000 people, doesn't that multiply perhaps to a couple of 100,000 jobs lost from all the people who service the people who lost their jobs?
Well, it's a minimum of three times. And it all depends on where you are and what, you know, the supply is. And I've seen figures as high as 8 and 9 times. But I know when we were handling logistics, when I was in counterintelligence, and we know for every man we had in the front line, we had three behind him. And so I think that says it all. So, 30,000 times three is 90. And they've already lost 200,000 jobs in that particular industry. In the last 4 years, we've lost over 5 million jobs in the last 5 years. I mean, the toll that's being taken on our country is just astronomical. And, of course, wages have come down, and people are borrowing against their homes in order to be able to continue to survive or live in the way that they have, or maybe even less.
Well, you know, what's really disturbing is now that the average American out of a job, he's got to compete with the people who are here illegally who work for a much lower wage base, you know. And so what we're doing is pitting American citizens against illegal aliens who are being encouraged to come into this country by the policies of both the Democrats and the Republicans.
Well, the legal Mexicans and the black people who have been at the, for the most part, at the lower end of the economic ladder, they're getting hurt more than anyone else. And that's really sad.
Well, Chris, I can see very well happening in this country what's happening over in France today, where eventually the people who have been deprived of their jobs are going to simply start rioting in the streets and demanding and, threatening to disrupt the government or take over the government if they don't get what they feel they're entitled to. And after all, the people who are here illegally, aren't they entitled to all these great things?
Well, you would think so, and the way the politicians talk. And France is different. They have illegal aliens, but most of them who are there are legal. And they've been burning 3,500 cars a year for the last several years. So this is nothing new. You just haven't heard about it. And so to do 6,000 in 2 weeks is a little bit much. But, you know, as Jean-Marie Le Pen said, you know, I've been telling you this for years, and nobody wanted to listen. And you've got a fifth column in your country. You've got a group of people who have a militant religion, who have no interest in being French, etc. And the problem's not going to end. And we get the same problem in a slightly different way.
And I really think that we will see the same unrest and violence in this country. And I think that's exactly what has been planned for a long period of time. That's why they changed the McCarran Immigration Act during the Vietnam War, which was used as a diversion to keep us seeing what was going on at home, just as the Iraq War is being used to keep us from seeing what's going on. Iraq is a great diversion. And as we argue, should we pull out or should we stay there? You know, why we're missing what the real issues are. We're not discussing the important issues, and we're certainly not addressing the very real problems that will result in the ultimate destruction of the American way of life. Well, Bob, certainly we're concerned about what's happening. As far as the GM loss, we hear that certainly Ford's going to be laying off people. Even Merck, the very, very successful drug company, is talking about laying off 4,000 people. Isn't this sort of a gigantic sucking sound that Ross Perot talked about here about 8 years ago, those jobs leaving America?
Well, yes, and he was correct, at least on that count. And this is only the beginning. It's going to get exceedingly worse, much worse. And, there's no end to it as long as we do not enact protective tariffs in our country. And it's extraordinarily important that we do so.
But I don't think, of course, the either political party would allow that. We saw, the Bush administration spent $50 billion in bribes, to bribe the congressmen to pass CAFTA, and twisted arms and threatened them, and I'm sure they had dirt on some of them that they got to go along with them. And $50 billion was acknowledged, certainly by the people in Washington D.C. $50 billion to get CAFTA through. There's something wrong when, of course, Randy Duke Cunningham, who I believe is a crook and was taking, but he was a piker. He only got a couple of million dollars for himself. $50 billion in direct bribes. And, of course, this was, in development programs and pork for the, for about 15 congressional districts in this country to buy the votes of the congressmen to get them to vote for CAFTA. Do you really think that they're ever going to put on protective carrots? Tariffs again, which would be the end of globalization?
Yes, if we can get the people in Congress changed.
All right.
If we can't, it's not going to happen, and our country, as we know it, is going to go down the tubes financially and economically, and we're going to have rioting in the streets, and we're going to have civil insurrection, and it could be the end of the country as we've known it.
All right. Well, I certainly wouldn't disagree with you at all on that aspect, Bob. And one of the things, of course, that I think is happening that's really so fascinating is the fact that we're seeing now gold and silver almost coming alive here in this last couple of weeks after, just gradually creeping up here over a period of many, many months, and then suddenly just beginning to shoot up in this last few weeks. What's your take on that?
Well, we started recommending gold after... at the same time, actually, we told people to get out of the stock market in April of 2000. And I've been after people to buy numismatic coins and bags of silver and gold and silver shares. And I still am. We haven't even finished phase one, which I think is 850 gold. And there'll be three or four phases depending upon once the euphoria in the market starts, it goes crazy. And I think now that we've, this morning we crossed 500, even though we closed at 499, it's on its way. In fact, I sent out one of the letters, if you remember, when we were at 347 when it pulled back, and I said, this is the last chance. You're never going to see this number again. And I was right. And I think the professionals are going to come in here after we've cleared 500 because they're guaranteed that we're really in a robust bull market. They can see the inflation. They can see what the Fed's doing, trying to cover up what they're doing. They can see Bernanke coming and says if we need money, we'll just dump it out of helicopters.
Hold that thought, hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman, and we were talking off the air about what's happening to the gold market, and Bob was simply pointing out that the gold actually got up considerably over 500 today, was driven back down to close at 499. Now, a 500, if it were to remain at 500, this would be a major breakthrough on the price of gold. Silver is doing very well, and the question is, why are they going up at this time in history? Is it that they can no longer artificially suppress the price of gold, Bob?
That's true. I think they're close to being out of gold that is not already sold from their coffers or already leased. And, in fact, they may very well be short. And so the game is really on now because there are suppression techniques are not working as well as they did before and may not work in the future. But the systemic problems, we have a balance of trade deficit, which is 6.7% of GDP. We have horrible, the fiscal deficit last fiscal year was $516 billion, contrary to what you were told, at $300 and something billion. And, you know, the lies are profuse coming out of Washington. It's one thing that they do very, very well. And you also have the suppression process. You have tremendous physical offtake in India, Middle East, and China. You also have declining production. For the last 15 years, there's been very little exploration done in comparison to that which was done in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And I was a stockbroker for 28 years specializing in gold shares, so I know from whence I speak. I've been involved for 46 years now. And you have all these factors coming together at the same time. It is absolutely enormously explosive, and people should be buying gold and silver-related assets, and they should be getting themselves out of debt. And both of those things are extremely important, and quite frankly, as far as I'm concerned, they're the only things to do. I mean, you've got to get your house in order, because this coming year, the economy is going to decline, the price of homes is going to decline, and that's going to continue over the next 4 or 5 years. And during that period of time, I think we'll see $3,500 in gold and probably over $100 in silver. And it's going to be the biggest bull market in history of anything. And it's a real bull market. And fortunes are going to be made. And unfortunately, the Canadians and Americans and the Europeans are absolutely not even in the market yet. And when they do start to come in, and I don't expect them to come in until after we pass 850, the pros will be in between here and 850. And they'll be in after that, but they'll make some big money in here because they're leveraged. And when these leveraged players come in, along with hedge funds, I mean, you'll see moves in gold of $50 and $100 a day, which we saw back in the late 1970s.
Yes, I can remember very well what happened in 1979, just seeing this thing take off like a great bird. What's going to happen to platinum? Do you think it'll follow along with gold?
Yes, I do, only because it's platinum. And platinum is an industrial metal. And primarily it is used in jewelry, but not to the extent that gold and silver are. And you also have palladium as well, which is around $265 an ounce now. And it wasn't all that many years ago that palladium was over 1,000. But that's a strictly industrial metal. Very little jewelry is being made from palladium except in China. And it's sort of a poor man's platinum. And I think that all facets of that market will do well, but I think the safest are gold and silver, because I think the demand there and the supply just can't meet. It's a chance of a lifetime investment-wise. The market in the late 70s was excellent in relation to inflation and financial and economic monetary profligacy, but this is going to make that look like a dwarf. I mean, if you think the market moving from 1,000 to 11,000 over the last 25 years was big, where do you see what gold and silver are going to do?
Well, I think it's going to be a very, very exciting time. For those people who have made some preparations, I do think, though, that the great tragedy is an awful lot of Americans are going to suffer because they don't understand the monetary system. They really think that they have security in their pensions. They think they have security in their jobs. They think they have security in what they have denominated in dollars, whether it be, you know, annuities or bank deposits or CDs or any of these various monetary increments. I think they're in for a surprise, don't you, Bob?
A big surprise, because inflation is going to continue at a very high rate.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman and right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, and we're talking about, well, we're talking about really what's happening to the gold and silver markets, and my understanding is that people in a lot of other countries now are, you know, really these people have not lived as we have with this wonderful affluent society built upon a fiat money system. They don't trust paper money, my understanding, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but people all throughout Southeast Asia, and certainly in China and India, are turning to gold, and certainly many of the people in the, you know, in the Arab and Muslim countries are doing the same. I'd heard that even Thailand had put an order in that all gold dealers should stop putting in new orders for gold because it was affecting their balance of payments. Had you heard that?
Yes, I have, and they are doing that, and you know, owning gold is part of their culture, and it's something that, you know, Westerners, so to speak, miss. They don't understand the cultures of these people, and gold is purchased for a rainy day. It, you know, it's like saving, something that Americans used to do. They don't do it anymore because we have a negative savings rate in America today, but that has been influenced and recommended by the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Sir Alan Greenspan.
What does he recommend?
He recommends that people
don't save
and that they spend as much money as possible and use their credit cards and use all kinds of credit so that our economy will do well.
Well, it may very well, but people are going further and further in debt. And we need to have a savings rate so people will have something to fall back on because, you know, you watch and see what they're doing in Washington, D.C. today. Now, I don't believe in the socialist programs. And I don't believe that the federal government should be setting up a safety net, but we have one and we've had it for some time, and it looks like they're poking big holes in that safety net. That there are a lot of people are going to come down the line, you know, anticipating that a big brother is going to be there to look after them when things get bad, and they're sort of like jumping off the, you know, off the building, expecting you're going to get caught in a big net, and there's no net there.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And once the stock market gets down, which I believe it's going to, even if it just goes back to 72.68, we'll. The pension funds will be looking at 50% losses, and they're offside now about approximately $650 to $700 billion that they have not put away. And then you have pension funds that belong to cities, counties, states, and even the federal government.
Hold that thought, right? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were simply talking with Bob from the International Forecaster about what's really going on behind the scenes, and I really want to get on with what we were talking about, but before I go on, because I always forget, so I like to do it at this point in the program, Bob, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get the International Forecaster, how they can get in touch with you and get in more information?
Well, the International Forecaster is published by email every week, and we also publish in hard copy twice a month. And it's about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. We have a website, and that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, FORECASTER.com. And those who would like to email, they can email me at international_underscores like a dash, but it's lower down. It's like a line on a line. International_forecaster, FORECASTER, at Yahoo, YAHOO.com. And if you'd like a free introductory copy, just call toll-free 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188, and we'll arrange to have a copy either in hard copy or by email sent out to you immediately.
All right, fine. So That's the international forecaster, Bob Chapman. Now, we were talking off the air about what's really going on, apparently over in Thailand, where they put out a directive, the government's put out a directive, telling gold dealers not to buy any more gold because the people over there are buying so much gold it was affecting their balance of payments. You see, the people over there aren't as smart as the people here in America who believe in paper currency and they believe that this can go on forever. They want something tangible to back up their savings so that if the whole system falls apart, they'll have something to fall back on. So the people in Thailand and the people throughout Malaysia and certainly the people in China and in Japan and India are nowhere near as smart as our people are. Those people are all buying gold and buying silver. And isn't that one of the reasons why the price is going up?
Oh, absolutely. It is. And they will continue to do so. It's part of their culture as well. And they have had one government after another, one war after another. And so the only thing that they've ever found that is lasting as far as holding value, which is not someone else's liability, is gold. And it's been going on for centuries, and it will continue. And there's no way the international bankers are going to stop it. As a matter of fact, in Vietnam, and I didn't know this until yesterday when I wrote about it, when you buy a house, they settle the house in not in cash, but in gold.
Really, in Vietnam, huh?
Yeah, and the reason this story got out, so to speak, was because the real estate market had come to a standstill in Vietnam. People were waiting to see which way the price was going to go, because it had been going up.
All right, so they wanted, in other words, the people who are going to sell certainly wanted to know that whatever they got would be something that would be worthwhile. But they can destroy the value of paper currency literally overnight. So obviously mm-hmm. somebody who is selling wants to get something tangible in return. Well, that's fascinating, and I think that you have to watch what these people in the other countries are doing, because what they're doing, of course, is beginning to dry up the supplies of gold. What's happened is the central banks of the world have wanted to force people to use their fiat money system, or their fiat money as a medium of exchange, so they've artificially kept down the value of gold so we would have nothing else to deal in other than their paper money, which they create out of nothing. And then, of course, they use to buy up the media and the corporations and the drug companies. And certainly, they even buy up a lot of the mining companies. They buy up certainly the finest politicians in Washington, D.C. that money could buy. As long as you can create money out of nothing, which the banking system does, why, you can make tremendous profits. But you can't let the people have anything of intrinsic value. If you can convince them that, you know, gold really isn't important at all, why, it's a relic of the past, why people aren't going to accumulate it, and then, of course, when you destroy the value of the currency, why the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Isn't that how the system works, Bob?
Right, and you're at the mercy of international bankers, and they make money out of thin air. It's the biggest racket in the history of mankind, and they get away with it. And most of the contracts that they write for loans are fraudulent, and it's not a subject I want to get into in this program. But that's a fact, and they've been doing this for centuries, and it's got to be stopped. That's why central banks are privately owned, because they're just money-making machines.
And I think there's not probably one person in 100 in America who knows that the Federal Reserve System is a privately owned central bank. They call it the Federal Reserve to confuse the people, but if anybody lives in a city where one of the Federal Reserve banks is, and you look in the telephone, it books, it's not under government agencies, it's listed as a private corporation, because it is a private corporation.
Well, it's owned by the 13 Federal Reserve banks, which are owned by shareholders, many of whom are not U.S. citizens. So here you have a central bank that is owned in part, a good part, by foreigners. That's not a very good situation.
Well, of course, that was what happened with the First Bank of the United States, and that's one reason why the Congress did away with it back in 1811. But, of course, the next year, where we had the War of 1812, and the same thing happened, of course, at the time of Andrew Jackson. We had a central bank, the second central bank, of the United States and the Second Bank of the United States, and pretty soon a large part of that was owned by foreigners. And this caused a great deal of resentment, especially on the part of the common people. Of course, the elite thought it was wonderful, but one man stood in the breach, and that was a man named Andrew Jackson. And he always said that one man with courage is a majority. And he stood up against the central bankers, and they tried to kill him, they tried to destroy him, they tried to discredit him, but he saved our country at least from their crutches for, you know, at least 60 years.
Well, you know, when I studied him, and it was because my children would go into school in detail, I found out what a great, great president he was.
He really was. He was a true man of integrity, and we owe him a debt of gratitude. In fact, we write this up in a pamphlet we have called The History of Money and the History of Andrew Jackson, the history of the Central Bank, the Second Bank of the United States, and how single-handedly he preserved the Union, preserved our independence. Well, Bob, what should people be doing right now? I mean, we painted a pretty bleak picture. Incidentally, we had a seminar about a week and a half ago, and a young man came to me and he said, "You know, I've been listening to your program for some time. I took your advice. I sold my expensive home in Salinas and moved to another area." He showed me a picture of the beautiful home he'd bought. He says, "I don't have to work for 5 years," and I said, "You get yourself a job. Don't squander the money you've made. You'll need it for the future." But, you know, I think the people who have, you know, made their plans have done very, very well. I think the average individual, though, really doesn't quite believe what you've been saying.
Well, you're absolutely right. And we have subscribers that they get worn out, unfortunately, because each week we tell them the truth in volume. And they just can't emotionally handle it. They get overwhelmed. But to make it simple, you get yourself out of your credit card and revolving debt, pay off your vehicles if possible, because coming year and the year after, there's an excellent chance one of you two breadwinners in the family will be without a job, and maybe you can still keep your house if you've done away with those debts. If you have extra assets, so to speak, after you've accomplished that, then you want to be in gold and silver shares and stock and in coins in the biggest way that you can. I see no other viable asset now. There are those people who have to keep some money, depending upon their situation, in cash or something like cash, such as U.S. Treasuries, especially people with a great deal of money. And it's hard for them, you know, to spend $10 million in gold, shares, and coins. A lot of them don't want to do it. And so what they do is they buy TIPS, which are Treasury Inflation Protective Securities, which are 10-year U.S. Treasury notes, and you can get them at your bank, and they come in $10,000 denominations, and you are limited to $30,000 per person in your household. But that is one way for those who must have some cash available. I mean, if you've got a business and you've got an extra $4 or $5 million sitting around, well, you can go buy treasury paper with it, and you can always borrow against your treasury paper. And so, you need fluidity, you need liquidity, in a business. But that's the way to go. And it's just as simple as that. I do have recommendations in the International Forecaster of stocks to purchase on the long side, whether they're in gold and silver. We've been in oil and gas, but we're out right now. We get out close to $70 and $14.50 on the natural gas. I recommend commodities for those people who want to gamble. And I have a lot of short positions that people are making a fortune on, and they're going to make a lot more money on them. But that isn't for everybody. That is dangerous, but it all depends on the individual's experience. Very often, when you do something in a specialized way, like get into currencies, you want professional management, because there's no way you're going to be able to compete with the professionals. And so there are other things to do for people who have large wealth. The average person should keep it simple.
All right, we've got Bob calling from Covina, so let's... Hi, Bob. Did you have a question for our guest tonight?
Yes, I do. This is Dennis.
This is Dennis, okay.
Yeah. And, you know...
Are you calling from Covina?
Covina.
Okay, very good.
Is Bob there?
He's Bob here. Right, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you, because we're hearing from different people that the stock market's next year is going to be bad, and people that have a lot of money in it just going to probably lose. And wouldn't it make more sense to keep what you have in? Because everybody panics and they start selling everything. But to me, I thought, you know, because we don't have a whole lot of money into the stock market, and I bought a lot of silver and whatnot, and I'm 70 years old, I'm retired, and, you know, like I say, I didn't put everything into it, but we bought considerably a lot of stock, and this woman made me a lot of money this last year, over $20,000.
Well, now, but Dennis, what sort of stocks are you in? Are you in, energy
good.
Stocks or what?
Oh, they're all kinds.
All right, okay. Well, yeah. How would you respond to Dennis, Bob?
Well, I think that you have to qualify your risk,
mm-hmm.
and we're entering a time that's going to be extremely difficult, and it's just beginning. And my recommendation is to be short the market in tandem with gold and silver shares and coins. And I think that generally speaking, the market now is a minefield.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a great deal of what the market does over the next year and a half or so will be based upon interest rates. And interest rates are supposed to go a bit higher here to reach what they call parity.
Mm-hmm.
And the interest rate for the short-term paper from the Federal Reserve, which is the overnight rate to the banks, is 4%. They expect it to go to 4.5%
mm-hmm.
In November and then in January.
Mm-hmm.
I think parity is 5.5%. And if that, in fact, is so, and the Federal Reserve's new manager, chairman, Mr. Bernanke, decides that he's not going to keep interest rates where they are and he lowers them, then the market would tend to go higher.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what he's going to do yet, but I don't want to take that risk. Another thing that's going to happen if the interest rates go lower is that silver and gold are going to go absolute bananas. And so you may have both markets going up to some extent at the same time,
mm-hmm.
but you're still safer in gold and silver-related assets than you are in the market.
Well, would you, Bob, would you suggest certain, maybe a good to sound gold and silver stocks?
In the listed stocks that are trading, I know the management's in. I specialized in gold and silver shares for 28 years. And incidentally, I used to live in Hacienda Heights, which is just above you. And so I know where you live, and I know a great deal about the area.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back in the...
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, my vehicles, my home are paid for. I'm not in debt. I don't owe anybody anything. I'm retired, you know, I'm 70 years old. But I've got quite a bit with stock. And she was just out here to my home not too long ago, and we went over everything. And this woman's made me quite a bit of money. And
If that's the case and you feel she's going to continue to do so, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know...
Like I said, she's been in this for over 20-some years, and she says, Dennis, you know, I've heard this all my life. People say it's doomsday. It's going to fall out, everything. And she goes, you know, just don't panic like everybody does. They all panic.
Well, she may be right, but mm-hmm. I will tell you what I think, and I think this is a time to panic,
mm-hmm.
because I believe reading what I do,
mm-hmm.
that we are in real financial trouble.
Right.
And even Alan Greenspan, if you read very carefully what he's telling you that we should tell the citizens of this country
mm-hmm.
The truth, and that is that when they retire, they may not have the health care and the pension benefits they've been promised. If that indeed is true, now what he's basically saying is, tell them the truth now so that, you know, they're going to be able to, you know, maybe work longer and begin saving up so they won't, be in the real trouble. What he's really saying is,
right.
he thinks the whole thing's coming down. The house of cards is about to come down. And, you know, you're going to have to, I would suggest being diversified, because mm-hmm. the stock market does come down. You certainly at 70, you don't want to lose what you have there. So,
well, that's true.
And maybe you take half of it out and put it into, or gold, and certainly, I think, Bob, do you think gold and silver are good stocks or a good place to be or not?
Yes, I do. As long as you get good advice,
mm-hmm.
There are a lot of companies, there's a handful of companies out there compared to what they used to be. I specialized them in for 28 years, but mm-hmm. There's companies like Agnico Eagle mm-hmm. and Crystalex and Silver Standard and Northmont Mining, all of which are good companies, and they'll make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Agnico has already gone from 5 to $22 a share, and that certainly has outpaced the markets.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'm not a financial advisor, Dennis. You're going to have to do what you think is right.
Right.
Good night. God bless.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're going to have Dennis. I mean, we're going to have Bob with us for just a couple of minutes, and certainly... As we look and see what's going on, of course, Dennis's point is that this woman's done very well in the past and says, just hang in there. Everybody's talking about doom and gloom. And yet, of course, doesn't the market really go in cycles, goes up and goes down? And aren't a lot of the stocks that are on the market today really overpriced as far as price-earnings ratio is concerned?
Yes, they are. And you've got two factors here in this last year. You've got the Fed in the repo pool, which today was over $100 billion, which I think is close to, if not a record. And that gives them $150 billion during the course of the day to go into different markets and manipulate them.
And what you're suggesting is the government is manipulating the stock market because they want the people to perceive that everything's hunky-dory.
That's true. And then on top of that, they have this Employment Act, which allowed corporations, which transnational corporations, which had monies offshore from earnings, to repatriate them. Instead of charging them 33% in taxes, they charged them 5.25%, which is an absolute gift to them. They were supposed to bring the money back and create employment. They did nothing like that. They brought the money back and they used it in their operations, and they used it to buy stocks. And that's the second reason why the market is where it is right now.
In fact, basically what these corporations were doing was buying back their own stock. Wasn't that what a lot of them were doing?
Yeah, they've been doing it for a long time.
And of course, really consolidating their position, but not helping the economy at all. Well, Bob, we've got about a minute for you to wrap up the program tonight.
Well, I think there's a lot of, exciting, scandalous things are in the works. We still have investigations going on in Washington. We have letters coming from Europe asking whether we have secret bases where we torture, abuse, and rape people. We have the possibility of new wars. And if that happens, the oil price and the price of gas, natural gas, will go crazy again. There's all kinds of landmines out there, and it's going to be extremely difficult to invest, and that's why I make it as simple as I possibly can.
Well, I certainly thank you. Our guest has been Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster, and, of course, you can reach him at 800-375-4188. If you'd like to get a copy, that's 800-375-4188. Bob, thanks very much for being with us. I'll email you. We'll light up some more programs.
Okay, bye-bye, and thank
bye-bye.
You.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I always enjoy having Bob Chapman on our program, because he's been at this even a little longer than I have. He got started back in the late 1950s and was with military intelligence. He's been in the stock market, involved with all of the various increments of the stock market for many years, of tremendous wealth of information. So you listen to him, and if you agree, fine. If you don't agree, well, we just put him on, and we put people on to talk about what's happening financially for your utilization, and so perhaps help some people out there begin making preparations for the very difficult times that lie ahead. We put together a number of our newsletters into a little pamphlet called The History of Money. That's the history of money, and tell you all about the First Bank of the United States and the Second Bank of the United States, and about Andrew Jackson. It's a wonderful, wonderful story of a very courageous man who said, one man with courage is always a majority. So if you're interested in getting that or many of the other things that Radio Liberty provides, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, which is Peak Oil 2, which will explain to you why the price of natural gas is going up, why the price of oil and gasoline and heating oil is going up, and why President Bush refuses to release heating oil from the Strategic Heating Oil Reserve, which would bring the price down and bring it down dramatically. But so why aren't they releasing the oil? Why are they going to impoverish so many people on the east part of the United States purchasing heating oil? Well, you'll certainly want to get our latest newsletter. It's called Peak Oil 2. Now, if you do have access to the Internet, you can go to www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com and pull down our latest newsletter, Peak Oil 2, and the one before that was The Myth of Peak Oil. And of course, if you don't have access to the Internet, or you have not yet been in touch with our ministry to get material, we'd be glad to send you a free copy of our Peak Oil 2 letter. If you just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, we do hope many of you go to our website at radioliberty.com and listen to our Internet program. It's 5 hours a day. Well, you won't get much accomplished. You can listen a couple of hours a day on the networks that we do, and then, of course, you can listen to get the shortwave frequencies, but your job is to tell other people about our programs. If you're listening on the Here's Help radio network, remember that we do a program on that network and the stations there. It would be 12:30 every Saturday, 12:30 every Saturday, and then, of course, this program is broadcast there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a delayed basis on the Here's Help Radio Network. We do hope many of you out there in the listening audience will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us as we reach out across America with the news behind the news, the story behind the story, the information that some of our leading conservative Christian columnists are paid so much not to tell you. So if you'd like to get our material or help us disseminate it, our telephone number 1-800-544-8927, then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're involved in the spiritual battle for the souls of men. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to be minds of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station we're listening to. Oh, they're my views, the views of our guests, and, well, our guest for this hour is going to be Derek Skousen from World Affairs Brief, which is second thing I do every morning after I check my emails, to go to a World Affairs Brief to find out what's really going on across America. So we always enjoy having Derek and his brother Andrew on with us, and tonight we have Derek to talk about, the rather exciting things that are happening, and not only in Washington, D.C., but throughout the world, that are going to impact upon everyone in the listening audience. Derek, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's good to be here.
Well, what are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, we have lots of news that's just been showing up today. It seems like all the news stories have been kind of waiting for us a little bit over the Thanksgiving holiday, and then along comes Monday, and pow, we get hit by three or four major things all of a sudden. We saw, for example, this morning how that the congressman in California resigned today. This is Representative Cunningham, and because he, certainly had gotten involved with a lot of shady deals involving all of the defense contractors down there in that area, and so of all the billions of dollars that were shuttled back and forth across that, he apparently has been implicated in taking bribes associated with that, and also tax violations related to that. It, interestingly enough, it's just one of many scandals that are going back and forth across Washington right now. There's just so many right now. Even the experts are having trouble coming up with a list at the top of their head.
Well, certainly we see the Tom DeLay situation. We see the Senator Frist, who has a blind trust, but of course he's directing how things are being bought and sold in his blind trust, and somehow that doesn't seem quite right now. He's a Senate Majority Leader, but I suspect that so many of the congressmen are getting payoffs. Now, I think that there's some of them who are honest. But, I mean, this is what happens. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone in Washington, D.C.
Yes, it's much more of a process in Washington than it is just the straight moral issue that we see it at, as Americans, and that we expect from our politicians. It seems that when politicians get to Washington, D.C., and they see how things work, and they see how complex the situation is in there, and the kind of the interconnectedness of all of the red tape and all of the special interests as they combine, it creates some very complex scenarios that have developed over the years.
And because anybody out there in the listening audience honestly believe that people would give tens of thousands of dollars to Senate candidates or millions of dollars to presidential candidates without expecting something in return?
That's exactly right. And it's amazing how far that the legal system and the political system has gone to work around kind of the set of expectations and legal loopholes and legal areas that the law has put in place to make sure that these aren't abject bribes.
And, of course, every time we pass legislation that is going to restrict that sort of thing, why we lose more of our freedom? They passed the McCain-Feingold bill to stop this sort of thing, corporate financing, soft money, and all it really did, of course, the corporations found a way around it, but it also had something in there that limited free speech. Certainly a committee could let anybody know how their congressman had voted within 60 days of the election. So the corporations were able, of course, to keep on bribing the congressman, and we've just limited free speech. Every time they pass a law, there are unintended consequences. And, of course, they're all aimed at taking away our freedom. Well, Derek, you go ahead and pick up the story.
So along with the resignation of Representative Duke Cunningham today, we also saw that the country of Canada lost its government, so to speak, Canada had a vote of no confidence today, and based essentially on another scandal similar to the scandals that we're seeing in Washington, where there was a mismanagement of funds associated with a fairly large program going on there in Canada, and based on that, the Parliament was essentially disbanded, and they will be holding elections to put together a new government over the Christmas holidays. So that will be quite an interesting scene going on in Canada this next few weeks.
All right, well, that's great to know, and there's a very, very small minority up there that I know, of course, takes our newsletter, and they had told me they had regular prayer sessions, and knowing full well and understanding this is really a spiritual battle, and if you're not answerable to God, why shouldn't you take the bribes? And since we've taken God out of our government and God out of our schools and certainly God out of our television and our entertainment, why should we be surprised that we have a corrupt nation? And what we need to do is get back to having people who fear God in government.
And so, even though here in the United States we don't have kind of the same parliamentary system that can have this kind of, temporary collapse of government due to a no-confidence vote from these kinds of scandals, the same process still occurs here in the United States. The same kinds of scandals occur, and the same kind of mistrust for government creates a certain kind of collapse in the democratic process here in the United States. And we've been seeing that happening over actually the last several major elections as kind of the discontent for the political process shows itself. And yet the lack of Americans in general, very broadly speaking, because of course the democratic process only works in a broad way, is becoming manipulated in that process, and that discontent is being shoved back and forth into new situations that seem to only exacerbate the scandals that are going on. It seems like every election, whether it's Republican or Democrat, the scandals seem to increase. The number of them show up more and more. The amount of special interests grow exponentially, it seems, with each new type of government that we here in America put together.
And, of course, it's all a perception. The voting machines are rigged. I mean, you can call in and program any way you want to right in the middle of the election. We'll be right back. Yeah, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Derek is pointing out that there is just so much corruption in every level of government. I was simply pointing out that we will never have another free election until we get rid of the electronic voting machines. We're in Ohio. There was one precinct with 800 people, and they came up with 4,000 votes for George Bush, and they described it as a hiccup. It was just a hiccup of the machine, that's all. And, of course, in Ohio, they had exit polls. John Kerry carried the state overwhelmingly. But when they counted the vote that came from the electronic voting machines, they were supervised by the man who worked for the government, but he was also the chairman of the Bush for President Committee. Why, you'd never guess why the state went for George Bush. If we do not have fair elections, if we do not get away from the electronic voting machines, anybody with a modem can tap into that machine and change the outcome of the election. That's the great tragedy where we are today. So pick up the story there, Derek.
And I really like what you were saying, Dr. Stan, your comments about having a God-centered country in order to change the way that this trend is toward more and more scandals and less morality in politics as it goes on. And I really think that, similar to what you were saying, that politics has lost its principal orientation, and the democratic process and the political process in all of its levels of government is oriented towards power at the top and building benefits at the bottom, where people become benefit corrupted throughout the democratic process, and it encourages a higher level of power gathering at the people at the top levels of government, and all of that leads to an increased amount of scandals. The only thing that would change that is if the American people were able to reject this process of power at the top and benefits to the bottom and refocus on the original concept that made America great, which is principled-centered politics.
Amen to that.
Those principles are, of course, the principle of liberty and individual freedom.
Under God, right?
Of course.
Okay, well, go ahead. I agree with you totally.
We are also seeing in the news today that President Bush is spending a few days talking about border security and his guest worker program. These are programs and issues that are fairly complex to deal with. They're complex social issues, and President Bush has been having a great deal of difficulty in terms of getting his idea across to both sides of the political spectrum. Both the Democrats and the Republicans have a large amount of people which disagree strongly with the way that he is handling this guest worker program.
I think it's a genius. He's gonna do away with the illegal aliens by making them all legal. That's obviously such a simple solution. I don't know why nobody else ever thought of it.
And ultimately, that's it's one thing to change the law and make what was once illegal then legal, but it's another thing to create a status that illegality is allowed within the law, and in which they stay as illegal people, but they are allowed all of the rights that law-abiding citizens then have. And that's one of the things that is particularly dangerous about the direction of the guest worker program. The other thing that we're watching out for is how this guest worker program will be implemented. And as they're looking at the different ways of processing these people from the bureaucratic standpoint, it looks like it will lead directly to a national ID card. And that has a variety of concerns for those of us who are individual liberty-minded people.
I saw in a program the other night about this gentleman who'd gone to Moscow. It's one of these travel programs. And what was so interesting is that every place you went, there were the fellows from the police with the big fur caps on, you know, and the big heavy cook, it was in the middle of winter. And every place you went, you had to show your papers. Just like it's going to be here in America. And of course, we're going to do that to solve the problem that the government has intentionally created of illegal immigration. And of course, the terrorist program. But obviously our government is not worried about terrorism because they refuse to try to stop the people coming in from Mexico. On one hand, they talk about the danger of terrorism. On the other hand, they encourage them to come in from Mexico. You could not do such a poor job unintentionally.
That's right. It just begs the question, didn't people do a basic amount of prediction and analysis on what might happen with these major policy decisions that are going on? And the interesting thing is that there seems to be this pattern in avoiding the obvious. And when there is a pattern of avoiding the obvious, not just on the immigration issue, but we're talking about the issues in Iraq, we can talk about issues in terms of work, in terms of our diplomatic engagements with Western Europe, and a variety of other major subjects. Dealing with, for example, the emergency response with Hurricane Katrina. All of these had this same pattern, which was that there were major predictable effects and effects and catastrophes that could have been avoided, situations that would put the United States in a bad position. And yet the United States pushed through, despite those warnings, despite those predictions, despite the forecasts, pushed through with a policy that was detrimental to the United States ultimately. And this indicates this pushing through of a policy which doesn't make sense to the good of the American citizens indicates that there is a higher level agenda. And it's watching this higher level agenda that is one of the key focuses of the World Affairs Brief and what we do out here.
And that's one reason I always enjoy reading the weekly analysis that your father, Joel Skousen, does, because he always, of course, looks not at what the news is, but at the news behind the news. What's really going on? What is energizing and bringing about these policies that don't make any sense to you and I? But they obviously make sense to the people who are implementing them. So I think that this is one of the great advantages of your publication, because it looks beyond the obvious for the truth.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. So maybe we could go to the World Affairs Brief of this last week, that the current issue, some of the stories that we're analyzing this week. talk about the collection of evidence that we've been putting together over the last few weeks that indicates that the U.S. is still involved in torture. This is, of course, a big issue that is getting a lot of press. Even the president has had to stand up and make some fairly bold and actually some fairly untruthful statements about about what the U.S. does regarding torture. It's been a long process of propaganda regarding the Defense Department and other departments within the U.S. government about their policies on that. And the reason why it's so important is that most of us here in America, even those that don't watch the news on a daily basis, are horrified at the stories that are coming out about what we are doing, you know, in these foreign countries. And we meaning Americans, we meaning what our boys who have joined the military are being commanded to do and being asked to implement and being taught to do.
And of course, then when they do it, why they some of them are going to end up going to prison for long periods of time because they've simply done what they were ordered to. And of course, they were ordered to, if you read the study of Abu Ghraib, by intelligence officers from the CIA were giving the orders there. They were really in charge, and none of them were ever sent to the prison. It was just the military people who were foolish enough to carry out their orders. Instead of saying, no, sir, you can court-martial me, I will not do it because it's morally wrong. But then, when you take away the moral concepts from our young people, should we be surprised that they would do immoral things in order to? But why don't they ever try any of the people from the CIA who are really behind the torture? And why is there no outcry when the president says we're not torturing anybody, but if Congress passes legislation that outlaws torture, I'll veto it? I mean, is there an inconsistency? Why would George Bush say we would not authorize torture and then turn right around and say if the Senate passes this legislation, which they did, 90-9, I think, that outlawed torture, he said, I'll veto the bill?
That's right. And it just... I think that the outcry is there to a certain extent. Those who are watching it, but although some of us have just are standing with our mouths open in kind of shocked disbelief at the hypocrisy of it all, that the president could say that in one sentence, that, you know, we do not torture, we abhor torture, and yet I as the president and my administration will make sure that torture can happen within the offices of which I have power over.
We've got a real problem with the executive branch of government, especially with Dick Cheney, who I really think is the man who's pulling the strings, and I think, of course, whenever he pulls the strings, why George Bush's arms move.
That's something that we've been watching here at the World Affairs Brief very closely, and we have suspected and we have known pretty much all along that Dick Cheney is pulling the strings of the president. It's kind of a unique situation. I don't think we have seen historically a vice president that has had this much control over the foreign policy of the United States and over policy in general over the United States and over the presidential administration in general. It's almost like the power in the executive branch has been flipped away from the way that the Constitution was designed to set it up, and it has been done in a very subtle way, in a very careful way, and in a secret way that implies a collusion and a long-term agenda towards a direction that is against America's interests.
And I think we find that Dick Cheney really, really running things. Remember on 9/11. He told the president not to bother to come home. He was in charge, and the heat really took charge there. If you watch Saturday Night Live, they seem to have a much better analysis of what's going on than most of our commentators. If you watch Saturday Night Live, you always see these skills repeated over and over again about, of course, whenever Dick Cheney comes into the room, the president almost salutes and says, yes, sir, no, sir. I really believe that Dick Cheney's pulling the strings. And we see the dancer, but most people don't know. Who, of course, is manipulating the marionette. That's what Manly P. Hall wrote in his What the Ancients Expects of It. We'll talk about that a little later. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go ahead, Derek.
So one of the interesting discussions that showed up in the news that had to do with some quotes of Dick Cheney and President Bush as they were discussing the fall in the polls as Americans have been pondering the question of, you know, did the president lie to bring us into the Iraq War? And there is a variety of interesting word games that were being played. Cheney made these remarks. He says, "The flaws in the intelligence are plain enough in hindsight, but any suggestion that pre-war information was distorted, hyped, or fabricated by the leader of the nation is utterly false."
And I thought your point on that was so good. It wasn't the leader of the nation who distorted the intelligence. He didn't say it wasn't distorted, that the vice president didn't distort it. He said that the leader of the nation didn't do that. And, of course, that's probably true. George Bush simply gave him the script that he was told to read, and he probably believed what he was saying was true. But the people who control him, wasn't that the point you were making?
That's exactly right. And it's interesting to see this very subtle word game. He didn't say that that the administration, misled the, lied to the American people. Told the truth. He said that the leader of the nation did not distort or hype or fabricate this information.
That's almost Clinton-esque. You know, what is the meaning of the word "is"? What is? I think was the term that he used. What is the meaning of the meaning of the word "is"? And of course, that's exactly what they're saying. The leader of the nation didn't distort this. And that's absolutely true. Somebody else distorted it, but they've never been punished.
That's right. And so it's interesting that a lot of people haven't quite picked up on that. Some of the news reporters said that, in summarizing that statement, they said Cheney again denied the Bush administration manipulated pre-war intelligence to build support for the invasion. And actually, that isn't exactly true. Cheney was careful not to say that the whole administration, which would include himself, but rather, he said, the leader of the nation. And so, in a very technical way, Cheney was right. The president himself didn't lie. He was fed a script. He was fed a lying script, actually, by Dick Cheney, and he read it to the unsuspecting public. And so, President Bush was essentially just as unsuspecting as the rest of the American people in that area. Now, is that excusable? Well, of course not. Bush is ultimately the president of the United States. He is ultimately accountable and should be held accountable, and he does have the ability to do original research. He's in a position to do it.
But he's usually too busy on vacations or, giving speeches or kissing babies or whatever he does. I don't think he does any research at all. In fact, it's said that he very seldom reads a book.
That's right. But he could if he wanted to. And we, as the American people, should hold him accountable for his failing to back up and to have a certain amount of moral backbone behind the kinds of things that he's saying.
And so, what if he was fed faulty information, and he did not want that faulty information? Why hasn't he fired the people who were responsible for that? Because of course, the CIA said, "We never told you that this was a real problem." And so many people in the government said, "We never told you that." So why doesn't he find out who distorted it and simply fire them? That would solve the whole problem. And yet he won't fire anybody for 911 or for Iraq or... Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with Derek Skousen, World Affairs Brief. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and before we went to the break, I was simply quoting an article. It appears in a book written by Manly P. Hall, who is a Satanist, what the ancient wisdom expects of his disciples, where he talks about how we see the dancer, but the mastermind behind, who's pulling the strings of the marionette, we'd never see. That's quoted in our pamphlet that we have called The Occult Hierarchy. And if you haven't read it, we recommend it. It's actually three parts, a summary of all of our newsletters. But if you want the references, we have the references where these people working behind the scenes brag about how we see the dancer, but the person who pulls the string on the marionette is concealed by the cloak of secrecy. So I really believe that's what's going on today. Go ahead, Derek.
And so one of the things that we're trying to understand here at the World Affairs Brief is to watch all the news stories and as the news stories, and you kind of see the movements of the marionette, to use your analogy, and hopefully we can follow some of the threads and the stories strings and the patterns that show up as we watch news story after news story, and by doing that, get an image of who may be pulling the strings up above there. And what we are seeing is, over the past few weeks, is an indication that President Bush is acting very much like a marionette and a puppet of a president who is being pulled, in this case, by the strings of Vice President Dick Cheney, who has a very deliberate and long-term agenda that we are still trying to put together here at the World Affairs Brief, although the implications of that agenda are clear. We are seeing a growth in world government associations and organizations, and we are seeing a loss of individual freedoms and liberties and sovereignties at the national level.
And, of course, my fear is they're going to plunge us into a war with Syria. They're going to plunge us into a war with Iran. And they're going to convince the American people that we just had to do that. We have a moral obligation to get rid of those wicked dictators in Syria and those wicked government democratically elected in Iran. But the truth of the matter is we want to put our puppets in there like we have in Iraq, like we have in Afghanistan, and like we have in nations throughout the world. Puppets who will do what the puppet master tells them. So go ahead.
One of the things that we have been seeing here at the World Affairs Brief is that to a large extent, the puppet masters, as you put it in this today, have not been defending Bush in the way that Bush is enacting all of the policies that these people are putting forward. They have, in fact, been setting Bush up to become kind of a scapegoat for a variety of issues and policies and future tendencies. And in fact, the United States is being set up as kind of to become the next great world pariah. And as the world starts to backlash against the United States, someone is going to have to take the fall for that. And as of this date, there seems to be an indication that they're willing to let George Bush become the bumbling bad guy of the world.
Well, I certainly hope they don't impeach him, because the thought of his being replaced by Dick Cheney would be rather frightening.
I think that Dick Cheney is able to accomplish a great deal more in the background at this stage, and he would not be the kind of person who could do as much if he were at the forefront of at the top of the executive branch at this stage. In fact, I think that's one of the most interesting things to notice about the way power has been manipulated within the United States over the last several presidents, that having a president who appears to be one thing and yet enact a variety of other things is more useful in manipulating the American people and their perceptions. Especially, for example, a Republican president who is put forward, and yet all of his activity as a Republican president is to increase the size of government, the spending of government, and so many non-conservative kinds of issues make such many more great gains under a Republican president that could never have happened under a Democratic president.
I think that's so true. Certainly, Jimmy Carter increased the national debt $200 billion in his 4 years in office. Ronald Reagan criticized him. Of course, Ronald Reagan increased the national debt $200 billion every year. He was the president, but after all, he was a Republican. However, George Bush has increased government spending deficit to $400 billion a year. I mean, he dwarfs certainly Ronald Reagan, who was the biggest spender of all time, and now George Bush spending almost $400 billion a year more than we're taking in. How could this possibly be? After all, aren't the Republicans in favor of a balanced budget and limiting government? Or maybe that's simply all perception, having nothing to do with reality. Well, Derek, why don't you go right ahead and pick up the story from there?
So, from there, we are seeing another scandal that is brewing in Washington, but based on information that is happening on the other side of the Atlantic, we are seeing the second round of Downing Street memos, where, in which it has been leaked that Bush wanted to bomb Al Jazeera. And this is, of course, a key scandal for the Bush administration, because to have these kinds of statements come to light, that Bush is trying to lock down the press, only adds fuel and information to what we knew already, that there is has been a strong attempt to manipulate the kind of information that is coming out of Iraq.
But then there's some people who believe that this what you're speaking of course, is this Arab television station. That's always been a British intelligence operation. They control both sides, and certainly some people think that Al-Shahara, the material is putting out to inflame the Arabs is actually exactly what the British intelligence wants. Have you ever heard that suggested?
In fact, we talked about that a few weeks ago in the World Affairs Brief, how Al Jazeera is basically an operation that is built off of the BBC and uses the BBC satellites and funding, and most of the people who work at it are ex-BBC people. There's no reason to indicate that a great deal of the content that goes on the BBC is manipulated by the same kind of globalist organizations which have pushed through the invasion of Iraq and the subsequent quagmire that exists there.
And of course, what that Al-Zahara, this news service, is doing is to inflame the emotions of the Muslim people. You got to have an enemy, after all. You can't have a war unless you have an enemy. So let's get them just as mad as we and angry as we can. And they're the ones, of course, Osama bin Laden. Al-Zahari always go to with their latest hate attack on America. And we know it must be true because we heard it on television. But, of course, is this all simply being contrived? The only reason I could think this story about the bombing of this Arab television, either George Bush doesn't understand the script, or this is to give us the idea that it's legitimate. Which do you think it is?
Well, let's put together all of the information that we've talked about so far already. We've talked about, for example, that George Bush doesn't really have a very good understanding of what's going on in the whole Iraq situation. He's being read a script. He is also seeing a great deal of frustration when the things that he is promising to the American people and the expectations that he's setting up in these scripts that he's reading aren't coming forth. And so
I'm going to ask you to hold that for just a moment. We'll be right back. Well, Derek was just commenting about the story that has come out and covered in the World Affairs Brief, that the president was planning on bombing this Arab television station that is circulating all this violent anti-American pro-terrorist propaganda to the Arab population of the Middle East and really the Arab population of the world. Derek is pointing out that this seems to be a front for the British intelligence, that certainly the Arab television station broadcasting all this violent propaganda to the Arabs is happening to use the BBC satellite. Many of the people work there, former BBC employees. Many people believe that this is a BBC, a British government intelligence organization to inflame the passion of the Arab world. After all, if we're going to have a war against terrorism, we have to have terrorists, don't we? And if you saw what their idea is, that they're beaming into the minds of the Arab children. In fact, we have a video called The New Order of the Barbarians, and you look at the material on those television programs, you realize it is being designed to promote hatred of the West and infidels like you and me. But Derek was giving some points will you go ahead and pick up this story now that we have our audience back? What was the point you were making about the fact that maybe the president really doesn't understand what's going on?
So, based on the point that we were talking about earlier, that President Bush is mostly just a script reader and doesn't certainly do his own research and understand really what's going on and read the news stories to the same depth that you do, Dr. Stan. President Bush was probably very frustrated at the way that Al Jazeera was undermining the direction of Iraq and the propaganda that was being put forward by the press services that he was able to control through the Defense Department, And all of this frustration very likely boiled over into a desire by President Bush to take out Al Jazeera, basically an independent or a so-called independent press service. That is, of course, against the morals of the United States in terms of free speech. However, it's very interesting that now the Downing Street memos have come out. We're also seeing the second part of the story, which is that Al Jazeera station was, of course, not bombed. It was protected. And that that Tony Blair's administration had to sit down with President Bush and try and explain a little bit about how things were really going on and tell him why he can't bomb Al Jazeera, that it's there for a purpose, it's there for a purpose that is separate from the kinds of purposes that President Bush may have thought that his Iraq war was for. Now, we don't know how much was said in there. We don't know how much the Downing Street memos contain because, of course, the Downing Street memos have suddenly been locked down, or the second set of Downing Street memos have been strongly locked down. And, in fact, Tony Blair is moving to use what's called the State Secrets Act to keep it from seeing the light of day. This is actually rather unique. The State Secrets Act has never been used before against a news organization in Britain. It's the use of that is causing a huge row in Britain because it appears all too clear that it's to use this for the first time just to keep Bush from being embarrassed is really strange for the British people to pull this kind of a card.
Now, wasn't it what the Daily Telegraph was going to go ahead and publish that, and then they was it which British paper was it?
I believe it was the Times.
Okay.
The Times of London that was going to publish that, and the British government said no, and in fact, if you do publish it, we will prosecute you under the State Secrets Act.
But of course, it would be so embarrassing for people to understand that this violently anti-American, anti-Western, anti-Christian network preaching hatred was really working for the British intelligence, and that's why they can't let the Americans bomb it. They have to just put it back together again, and especially using the BBC's satellite. What's wrong with this picture?
And so it would be very interesting. It would actually be very insightful for us to understand the inner workings of this relationship between the propaganda that is surrounding the whole Iraq conflict. We would get a lot of insight if we were to actually see the kinds of discussions that were going on as the British were trying to explain to the Americans what role that Al Jazeera played in this whole issue and why they should not bomb it. But of course, the British government is clamping down extraordinarily hard on this story and are not allowing it to come out. In fact, they are not allowing it to come out even more than the previous Downing Street memos, which are actually the memos that have kind of blown up in President Bush's face and have kind of brought to a head this whole issue of did the president lie in bringing us to Iraq. Well, the Downing Street memos were part of the key indictment of that statement that President Bush did push through the Iraq war despite all of the concerns that the British intelligence agencies may have had about the efficacy and efficacy of doing such a war.
Well, I think that the vast majority of the American people want to get out of Iraq, but it doesn't matter what the American people want. I'm sure the vast majority of the English people want to get out of the war. It doesn't matter how they feel. The elite has their agenda, and they're going to manipulate us into going along with it, whether the American people want to, whether the American military wants to. Everything is simply illusion and delusion, and they will always simply change the thrust of the argument so that the real issues are never asked. So go ahead and pick up the story.
And so there is this ongoing campaign to manipulate the American people, as you're talking about, to make them believe that these problems exist in a certain way that is described, that that there is this Osama bin Laden, that he has these issues and that he has these problems, and that Saddam Hussein has these weapons of mass destruction and has these agendas that are going forward, and that there's this fellow named Al-Zarqawi out there who is planning such and such and has done this and that. And yet, again and again, we're finding that so much of this is a construct, and it's a construct that is generated by the people who are manipulating President Bush, and the rest of the world is feeling manipulated by President Bush, when in reality the whole world is being manipulated by this global agenda that is operating behind the scenes and is creating a false truth. And it is our job to try and discover what that real truth is behind that.
Well, before we go on, I agree with everything you're saying there, but I do want you to get your telephone number and your website out so people would know how to get in touch with World Affairs Brief.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I feel sorry that I can't get to everything that we've talked about in the brief that has come out at this stage. And so for those of you who want to kind of get my full set of speaking notes, if you wish, or the World Affairs Brief for this week, you can give us a call at toll-free 877-518-5888. Again, that's toll-free 877-518-5888. By calling that number, they will mail you the latest copy of the World Affairs Brief, which is normally sent out to all the subscribers via email so they can get it as quickly as possible. And you can find out more about that and see all the information that we use to gather up this the stories of the week by going to worldaffairsbrief.com and find out more about what we do there.
And you'll be fascinated once you get the used to going there every morning and reading the summaries of the articles and pulling down what you want. You know, you'll find it will give you the information you're not going to get from Rush Limbaugh. So pick up the story there, please.
So we were talking about how so much of this perception around who the bad guys are of the Iraq War and of the Middle East is being manipulated on a wide and broad scale basis. And we're seeing more of that recently with the bombing in Jordan, how that's being associated with Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. And it's becoming increasingly evident, and there's a variety of interesting commentary that has been going around the Internet this week about how the statements by al-Zarqawi aren't entirely consistent with the personality that the U.S. has created for them. And there's a lot of evidence that is starting to gather that indicates that al-Zarqawi is probably more than he seems to be, where we're not sure how much of the al-Zarqawi story is real. You know, is there really this this person who is who's doing everything that he says he's doing, or is there a certain amount of manipulation by the intelligence agencies that are surrounding all of these all of the issues that al-Zarqawi is about? For example, the story about what al-Zarqawi claimed immediately after for the bombing in Jordan doesn't sync up with all of the facts that were happening in the bombing in Jordan. The statements that al-Zarqawi made and the way that the bombing was carried out is inconsistent with the interests of a potential Iraq insurgents force, which al-Zarqawi is supposed to be leading.
In fact, it was really so interesting. He said, we didn't do this, and then he went on to say that it's probably the work of the Zionists and the Americans, so American intelligence. So he blamed us for the bombing there. And, of course, when he blames us, we know he must be lying.
Right. So he blames us, but he doesn't blame us, but... Or he says that he did it, but the reasons why he says that he did it don't correspond with what he's doing. There are indications that the al-Zarqawi is supposed to be a Jordanian, and yet we only have, of course, his voice recordings, and those recordings don't seem to have the right kind of accent and Arabic that corresponds with where his background is supposed to be from. There's just a lot of things that allow us to suspect that perhaps many of this information is being manipulated and is being created and is part of the propaganda for the American people to create a kind of boogeyman that enables that allows the Americans to grasp onto and hold onto a certain kind of vision that is built by our administration and our CIA.
And, of course, the thing that really was so incredible about his statement, he said, you know, of course, we didn't do it. It was probably the intelligence agencies. And then he went on to say, and we were really going after. There's a group of Israelis who are meeting there. And I think it was Israelis that they thought that these Israeli intelligence people. So how could you do it and then not do it? And you got through reading his statement. And you were scratching your head and saying, how could you have it both ways? It doesn't make sense. Either there was, this man is totally mad, or they are intentionally trying to confuse us with a false story. Did you have that feeling reading that?
Yes, it's intentionally confusing. The statement, it has all kinds of loopholes that can say this or that or one conclusion or there, and yet nothing can be pinned down. It really just doesn't make much sense at all. And yet, that's not what the ultimate statement is by the Western press to the American people. The statement is simply, here's the official version. Arzakhari claimed credit. Here's this bombing. Terrorism still exists. The insurgency is growing in force. And we must stay the course in Iraq.
And, of course, that's it. We must stay the course in Iraq. After all, we'd be far better off fighting them over in the streets of Baghdad than on the streets of New York. And yet, of course, what they're not telling the American people is what Congressman Murtha said in his speech, that the terrorist attacks have increased dramatically, not only in Iraq, but throughout the world, since we attacked Iraq. That the attacks over the past year have increased from 150 a week to 700 attacks against the Iraqi people and Iraqi force every week. 700 attacks. Now, that's almost at least a 500% increase. And yet, how many Americans have ever heard what Congressman Murtha said when he gave his speech? That, of course, 60% unemployment, 80% of the Iraqi people want us out, 45% believe the insurgent attacks on the Americans are justified. Little wonder that the New York Times didn't publish the speech, but they told you to go to their website to pick up Congressman Murtha's speech, but you go to their website and it's not recorded there. What do they not want the American people to know? I think Congressman Murtha's speech is one of the most important things we've seen in a long time, and if you haven't read it, get it off the Internet. If you can't get it off the Internet, we'll send you a free copy, but it's on Congressman Murtha's website. But pick up the story there, Derek. I think that the American people do not understand. There's no water. There's no clean water there. Electricity is intermittent. 60% unemployment. The people hate America. Can we wonder why? In fact, one of the articles I read in your News with Views website, I should say World Affairs Brief website this morning, was the fact that some of the Iraqi leaders are saying things are far worse than they ever were under Saddam Hussein.
And what's important to understand is that all of this was predicted before the war happened. That when President Bush was initially talking about the potential of going to war with Iraq, many of the experts who understood the characteristics of the Iraq people and the way that the ethnic influences worked there mentioned how complex it could be. And yet it's even worse than that. It's even worse than the worst predictions were about Iraq because of all these extra aspects that you talked about the way that the infrastructure has been mishandled repeatedly, about the way that the Iraqi army was disbanded prematurely. And all of these things were done in exact, completely contrary to the recommendations by the people who understood Iraq here in the United States, the people who were writing the reports, who were advising the President and the Pentagon about what to do regarding Iraq. And yet, repeatedly, they seem to do the exact opposite, almost as if they were intentionally intending to make things worse and to inflame the entire Muslim world against the United States.
And, of course, the one person who did that was Paul Bremer. Who does he work for? Kissinger and Associates. Who is Kissinger? Why, he's, of course, the front man for the Rockefeller interests that are manipulating everything in our country. Paul Bremer was the man who disbanded the Iraqi military, who disbanded the Iraqi police force, who disbanded the Iraqi civil service, because there might be some Ba'athist party members in there. So we're just going to totally disrupt the whole infrastructure of the society. And then we get chaos, and they say, looky there, how did that happen? Well, we're just going to have to stay on year after year after year because there's chaos there, and after all, if we put out, why, there'd be even worse chaos.
That's right.
Well, go ahead. We've got the, I'll tell you when to quit.
So what we are seeing, then, is this process of both making things worse in Iraq, and this is not just obvious to the people who are in Iraq, but it's obvious to all of the other Muslim nations around Iraq. It's also obvious to all of the Western European nations and other countries in the world, which are becoming increasingly antagonistic towards President Bush and thereby antagonistic towards the American people, and is leading up to a strong backlash against the United States, where all of the world is being turned against us. And this seems to be very much a part of this long-term agenda.
I think it is. Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. All right, Derek was just simply saying that it appears almost like a long-term agenda to turn the whole world against America. Go ahead.
In the meantime, there is an ongoing effort to make sure that the Americans don't turn against their administration prematurely, that that the United States looks like a kind of a united front, which it certainly isn't. But there is certainly a strong effort to manipulate the American people, both from an opinion side of things, using the press and the media and the propaganda machine that that is there in Washington, but also from a legal standpoint. And we are seeing more and more law and secrecy acts and limitations of freedoms of America growing to control the way Americans think, act, work, and live. And we are seeing that in a couple of stories that came out over the last couple of weeks. One is the maneuverings of President Bush to avoid a Supreme Court ruling on Jose Padilla. This is very important because this has to do with the issue of habeas corpus and whether or not President Bush can hold U.S. citizens indefinitely without trial for being labeled as an enemy combatant, a term which doesn't have a strong legal definition.
Well, they've certainly been holding him for 3.5 years now without a trial, without the right of habeas corpus. But apparently, he is going to allow a trial, but now all of the charges have changed.
That's right. Also, it's very important to understand that the Bush administration insists that it has the power to hold Padilla as a prisoner indefinitely, regardless of the outcome of the criminal case against him.
And, of course, the thing is, where is the right of habeas corpus? And what we have done is simply do away with our constitutional guarantees under the Bill of Rights in the name of fighting those wicked terrorists who initially were, of course, funded by the CIA.
This is an interesting thing that President Bush and his administration is doing to avoid the whole habeas corpus issues. He says, well, if everybody's going to call habeas corpus, well, we'll bring the body forward. We'll bring Jose forward, and we'll have a trial. But whether or not he is guilty or innocent, we still have the power to keep him in jail, even if he's acquitted of all the charges. It's an incredible situation that is being placed forward.
And where's the ACLU when we need him? Anyway, we're out of time. Derek, thank you so very much. And we'll look forward to having you with us again on, I guess it's on Friday morning.
Thank you very much, Doctor.
Good night, and God bless. Mm-hmm. All right, well, that was Derek Skousen, and certainly one of our favorite guests from World Affairs Brief. And if you don't go up there in the morning, if you have the Internet, and pull down their information, you're missing the high point of your morning, an update of what's really happening in the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with Derek. I always do, and he's got so much great information, and certainly the World Affairs Brief has some great information. It's very interesting. One of the things I read there this morning is that the European Union is threatening to withhold the voting rights from any European country that is allowing secret CIA prisons to exist in their nation where people are being tortured. Now, this is, of course, obvious all over Europe. Everybody knows the CIA has secret prisons in certain of the Eastern European countries where they're torturing prisoners. How can you justify that? If you are supporting the current administration, how can you justify torture? And believe me, they are torturing people. I mean, there are so many reports, and the president has said he'll veto any legislation that prevents torture. Now, if you are a Christian and you believe in a sense of morality, I don't care what the other side does, we should never stoop to their level, because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And we have lost the moral high ground as Christians when we did not speak out against the evil that is taking place today. But you can't understand it unless you understand that there are spiritual forces that are energizing this whole situation. You can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can pull down our newsletters on the occult hierarchy. I suggest my May and June 2005 newsletters. We've put together a pamphlet with all of our articles on the occult hierarchy going back to 1999, taking you into the Illuminati, taking you into the book written by the Librarian of Congress, James H. Billington, called Fire in the Minds of Men, a term that President Bush used in his inaugural address. Fire in the Minds of Men, one of the most important books in my library. I suggest you go to your local library and try to get a copy of it, or you can give a call our 800 number, 1-800-544, and ask about this book. But it's all about secret societies written by the Librarian of Congress. Certainly conservative. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, one of the leading intellectuals in America. But, of course, he writes all about the secret societies that were behind the world revolution that started with the French Revolution and culminated with the Cuban Revolution in 1959. The only trouble is the world revolution is continuing. It's continuing today. As we move towards World War III, as we move towards the New World Order, the New World Religion, our plea to you is become informed. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter on the occult hierarchy, we'll be glad to send it to you if you haven't been in contact with us before. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet, I might add. Go to our website and pull down the May and June 2005 newsletters. And then check certainly the material we have on the secret societies. My book, Brotherhood of Darkness, will take you into these secret societies that really do run both political parties and make mockery of the democratic process. So our plea is go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Remember, we do a program on the Here's Help radio network at 12:30 Central Time every Saturday. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, because we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization.